Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. You're listening to a violin concerto by the minimalist composer Philip Glass, widely acknowledged as one of the late 20th century's most influential music makers. He's worked with artists, musicians, and filmmakers from David Bowie to Woody Allen, and famously collaborated with the theater director Robert Wilson on the landmark opera Einstein on the Beach in 1976. Even after Einstein, Glass did not quit his day job as a New York cabbie and sometime plumber. In fact, he was once called to install a dishwasher at the Soho loft of a very shocked Robert Hughes, who was then Time magazine's art critic. Clay Wirestone is arts editor for the Concord Monitor and a contributor to Mental Floss, where we found a list of 11 celebrated artists who did not quit their day job. Great to have you back, Clay.
It's good to be back, Virginia.
So the trajectory is usually you work at some kind of menial job until you hit it big, then you quit, and then you're a full-blown artist. Why do you think these artists did not?
Well, I think that's the stereotype. But I think being an artist, either a writer or a visual artist or a composer, they're not all known for necessarily being the most lucrative professions. And a lot of people simply want to have lives, you know, they want to have homes and spouses and, you know, not have to scrape by month to month. So I think there's a real attraction to that steady gig, whatever it is.
What do we know about Philip Glass? He wasn't just a plumber, but a cabbie. How long did he do it? And do you have any idea why he chose?
Well, for Philip Glass, I think it was really a matter of survival. I mean, he was working in New York City in the 1960s and 1970s, and he was working in a field where it was a very much an underground emerging field. And for someone like him, who came from a working class background, I believe his dad ran a music store, he did whatever it took to make ends meet. And for him, that meant working as a plumber, that meant driving a cab. He actually kept his cabbie's license and was driving the cab into his 40s. It was only at the age of 42 that he decided not to renew the cabbie's license. He thought, well, maybe this music thing is making me enough money now to support me.
And over across the pond, T.S. Eliot, most well known for his modernist masterpiece, The Wasteland. Writing was not the only thing that occupied his time. What was Eliot's other job?
Well, he actually had a couple. During the writing of The Wasteland for about 8 years from the 1917 to 1925, he worked for the bank, Lloyd's of London. He worked in their foreign accounts business. He was very well liked. People thought he did a great job. But his friends, led by the fellow poet Ezra Pound, were really kind of aghast that he was punching the clock like this. They actually put together a collection and raised money to give him the equivalent of his bank salary for some 5 years if he would just quit the darn bank job and go into writing and criticism full time. And Eliot actually turned them down because, as he saw it, why would he just take 5 years of security when he had potentially a career's worth of security in the lucrative banking sector? And even after he did leave the bank in 1925, it was only to go to another full-time job, which was at the prestigious publisher Faber & Faber, where he was an editor and actually then worked 9-to-5 for another 40 years.
Well, it's a wonder that when maintaining full-time jobs, so many of these people can actually produce anything. In fact, you write about Toni Morrison, who had a strategy. She just got up really early in the morning.
Exactly. Well, Toni Morrison, like Eliot in his later career, Toni Morrison was an editor, and she worked for Random House for some 20 years and was also a single mom with two kids. For the first part of her writing career, at least, she had to get up before 5 every morning because she said that's when her kids got up. And actually, this is also interesting. After she finally left her job at Random House, she said it took her a couple of years to figure out just how to be not so busy all the time, to actually find the space to be calm and to write and without having this constant job, constant work kind of deadlines around her.
Yeah, that's what we imagine, that you have to have some calm, some place of quiet. But I think of the poets Wallace Stevens. He was an insurance man in Hartford, Connecticut.
Exactly.
And William Carlos Williams, who remained in his practice as a pediatrician. Now, did either of them ever talk about why they stayed in their day jobs?
Well, I think for Wallace Stevens, it was actually mainly money. I mean, I think insurance is one of the more lucrative fields that people could be in, and he actually is working for what people know as the Hartford now. It's a still continuing, surviving insurance company. He also was a very ordered, Wallace Stevens was a very ordered and very routine-oriented guy. He didn't have a car. He would walk to work every morning and actually compose poetry in his head when he got to his office, it was about a 2-mile walk, he would then make sure that he got it all down and then he'd go about his work. For someone like William Carlos Williams, who I think is in many ways one of the greatest examples of this, he found direct inspiration in his life for his work. He was very interested in capturing kind of colloquial speech, how real people talked. And as a pediatrician for some 40 years in Rutherford, New Jersey, he really talked about that as being one of his sources of inspiration. He heard people at their high points, at their low points, and he heard how people actually spoke. He also used those experiences as a doctor in writing prose. He published a book that was called The Doctor Stories that was, you know, a collection of kind of vignettes based on his experiences.
Any other artists that you can think of that actually found inspiration from their workaday jobs?
In the case of Bram Stoker, who's really well known for writing, of course, the horror masterpiece Dracula, he had written before, but he was kind of a theater critic, and he came to the attention of Sir Henry Irving, who was an English actor of the era. Irving hired Stoker to be his personal manager and to look after a theater of his called the Lyceum in the West End of London. But for Stoker, kind of coming into that creative milieu of being around all of these famous and kind of outrageous personalities, it led him to write and publish his first horror story and to then start kind of a trajectory of works and publishing that led to Dracula in 1897 when that book came out. And it was a huge hit, and he actually still kept working for Irving for another 7 years until his benefactor died.
You also tell the story of the sculptor Richard Serra. Now, this is a sculptor who does these massive, like the size of ship's hulls, almost like often round concentric sculptures. He actually founded a company employing a number of his New York City artist mm-hmm. friends. In fact, he was a contemporary of Philip Glass at that point. What were they doing?
Well, the company was called Low Rate Movers. They basically had a single van, and the way that Serra put it was the various people that he worked with, they would share the van and each would only have to work 2 or 3 days a week. But what's great is that the people that he brought in to Low Rate Movers were Chuck Close, the painter, Spalding Gray, who became known as a monologist and actor, and Philip Glass, who apparently just really liked to work. And yeah, and he just said it was really the ideal situation because they were able to collaborate and then also find the time to go off and do their creative projects, you know, on their own terms.
Well, this one really threw me. Kurt Vonnegut also worked as a car dealer. I mean, some of the other jobs I see is a little more sort of creative. I suppose car dealership is creative.
I think Kurt Vonnegut actually wanted to be someone like Wallace Stevens or somebody who would make a lot of money and then be able to write on the side, because Vonnegut had already been known at this point as a science fiction writer. He'd published stories, science fiction stories. He'd published his first novel. But he really thought that, well, maybe I can find some sort of regular gig that will bring in a little more cash. So he started a car dealer in 1957 called Saab Cape Cod, which was just complicated by the fact that the Saabs of the era were really terrible, terrible cars. He wrote a really funny little essay about it in 2004, just talking about the fact that Saabs of the era, you essentially had to put in oil each time that you refilled the car, something he said that, quote, something that most straight women were unwilling to do. And actually ended up closing the dealership kind of within the year. He then suggested that it was his bad experience with Saab that was the reason that the Swedes had never awarded him a Nobel Prize for literature.
Clay Wirestone, arts editor for the Concord Monitor, also a contributor to Mental Floss. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
There's a link to Clay's full list of celebrated artists who did not quit their day jobs at wordofmouthradio.org. Coming up, you thought teaching math was tough? Try doing it without speaking. We'll hear about a man who uses mime to teach mathematics when Word of Mouth continues.